The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance
on News Talk.
Well, now we are joined from the United States by JD Capelluto, breaking news reporter with Semaphore. JD, good morning.
Hi, thank you for having me.
Delighted to have you. Now, first of all that talk before the election that there would be election fraud and that even during the course of the day, Trump tweeting that irregularities had been spotted in Pennsylvania, there were none. And now that he's won, of course it was a perfectly kosher election.
Yes, there were no major issues that would, you know, question the results of the vote here. And yes, a lot of those concerns were that if Donald Trump were to lose, then he would question the results. And I think what you saw of him tweeting about irregularities was there were fears of a mass, you know, kind of Democratic surge of turnout in Pennsylvania at that hour. And so that's maybe why he tweeted that. People that's what kind of some analysts purported. But ultimately, yeah, no issues with the vote, and he's not claiming any. So it seems to be avoiding kind of that discourse this time around.
Now, there were some problems in Georgia. We heard reports of bomb threats, and that resulted in some of the polling stations being kept open for an extra hour.
Yes, correct. So Georgia, which is also my home state, there were some bomb threats called into polling precincts that kind of led them to be temporarily closed. These were all hoaxes, but they were ultimately traced back to Russia. So this could be a very interesting kind of foreign interference story that we're taking a look at here. But it was mostly in Democratic-leaning, predominantly black parts of Metro Atlanta, where these polling precincts were temporarily closed. They were cleared, and then the voting was able to continue, and they were kept open late. You know, hard to say exactly how much that may have dampened turnout, but it certainly seemed like an effort to keep folks from going to the polls there.
Now, to bring us bang up to date, where are we with the remainder of the swing states? Have they been declared yet?
So the race has been officially called for Donald Trump. He will return to the White House. The swing states of Pennsylvania and Georgia and Wisconsin, it looks like, have all been called for Trump, which puts him at the margin that he will be able to come back to the White House. So it really, you know, doesn't matter that, you know, what happens in Nevada or Arizona. Not to say those people's vote doesn't matter. It certainly does, but it won't make a difference at this state in the race, along with Michigan as well, in terms of what happened. Trump was able to capture those relatively early and got a relatively decisive mandate to return to the White House.
Is it true to say that, by and large, the election was free, fair, well-organized, and without any major problem?
That is what it seems like, at least to me and to a lot of election authorities. They say it was, for in a lot of places, at least, the smoothest on record. And I have not seen, you know, any sort of issues that would cast doubt on that result.
What is the consensus about the victory of Donald Trump? I mean, it was thought in the dying days of the campaign that Kamala Harris had the wind behind her, the wind in her sails, and Trump was faltering with a number of very bizarre performances in his final offerings to his electorate. What are people saying was the reason he prevailed?
Yeah, it's very interesting. As you mentioned, the Kamala Harris campaign came into election night really feeling like they had the momentum here, and that, you know, the polls may have been, for example, underestimating Democrats, and that it would be this huge, decisive, what they call blue wave. But ultimately, she seemed to be dragged down by voters' frustrations over the economy, over inflation, and over the border, which are all issues that Donald Trump has just been hitting on. And he ultimately made gains across racial groups, which is fascinating, and also, you know, seemed to kind of cap his losses in the suburbs while also really gaining among rural voters as well. So kind of broadening his coalition, where a lot of people thought that it had been limited in the past elections, and that his kind of rhetoric and performance and, you know, multiple criminal charges in this style or in this campaign cycle, would have hampered that, but he seems to have only expanded it. So I think, you know, the pundits will spend certainly months, if not years, kind of discussing what exactly happened here. It seems to have really been something that people weren't expecting, especially across the, when it comes to like the broad changes across the racial groups, for example, and him kind of making inroads among Black and Latino voters. But that seems to be the broader trend.
Now, one of the claims that was made for the Harris-Walz campaign was that they were well prepared for the ground war, using volunteers who were enthusiastic and true believers, whereas the Trump campaign was using employees, people who were paid to knock on the doors and deliver the goods for the Trump campaign. And it was thought the Democrats really were going to do better in the ground war. But maybe in the modern era, the way Trump and Musk contrived to do it is best.
Yeah, exactly. That's kind of one of the things I mentioned with Democrats thinking they had the momentum. There was this huge shift, growth in Democratic volunteers and people knocking on doors, and people thought, does Donald Trump really, what is his ground game really? This traditional thing, he ultimately, bet on, going on podcasts that air to young men who don't often vote, for example, and kind of took this more unconventional strategy toward campaigning that I think people would argue would ultimately worked out. So I think that's also going to impact, presidential elections here and out, where it's not maybe not just come to ground game as traditionally has been said.
Yeah. And the blame game in the Democratic Party, I'm sure it's already begun, but they'd be looking at Joe Biden. Why didn't you stick with your promise to be a one-term president? And why did you keep Kamala Harris, under your thumb for so long of the 4 years?
Surely that's going to be something. There's also going to be progressives who are upset with, her embrace of Republicans like Liz Cheney, for example, and wanted her to kind of be a little bit go more to the left. There's going to be supporters of Palestine who were looking for her to, be more break a little bit more with the Biden administration on Israel policy. There's other people who are going to want her to have picked Pennsylvania Governor Josh Shapiro, for example, as her running mate. So there's going to be all of these, debates over the next several days for sure. It's hard to say if there was, one exact thing, but so far the trends seem to be that voters were just frustrated with, the current state of the administration, the Biden administration, and she is a part of the Biden administration.
Now, he has pledged to release those convicted for their offenses on January the 6th. How do you think that'll go down?
Oh, my. It's hard to say. You predict anything with Trump. I guess I would just lead with that. But it's certainly, I could certainly imagine pardons for those federally charged for January 6th. He, as he has kind of hinted, he may do so. But again, it's really hard to say anything with certainty at this point. Yeah, unpredictability is kind of his specialty. Yeah.
And you've also had a very long night. JD, thank you very much for joining us. That's JD Capoluto, breaking news reporter with Semaphore. In studio with me, Lorcan Nine, columnist with the Sunday Independent, head of training at the Communications Clinic. You look shell-shocked, Lorcan.
Tired rather than shell-shocked, Pat. Look, probably surprising, but not shocking, not the most predicted outcome, but definitely predictable. I mean, anybody who was looking at the polling and was analysing it was always going to be possible that all of the swing states would break one way. Yesterday, even James Carville, the Democratic consultant, was saying it's more likely that swing states all break one way than they do get mixed. So, I mean, it wasn't shocking. Obviously, ultimately, it is then surprising when you all the talk of a tight election and then it's over quite early.
And it was over quite early, in spite of the predicted difficulties with polling, mail-in votes, how they'd be counted. No hanging chads, but pretty much everything else was being touted as a possible difficulty. And there were none.
Ultimately, no difficulties, knew quite early once you saw North Carolina, once you saw Georgia, once you saw the initial from the Rust Belt, it was quite obvious what was going to happen. I mean, I think you could almost argue as well that it was decided much more before election night. I mean, if you bring it right back now with hindsight that we have, if we analyse it, Joe Biden made two major mistakes over the last number of years. Number one was when he was talking about his economic agenda. He missed the inflation issue and was labelling it Bidenomics for quite some time. A logical approach, trying to explain to people with data what it has to be an emotional argument, an emotionally resonant argument on the economy, is what Donald Trump ultimately had. And also, if we go back to the start of the year in February, when the special prosecutor announced that they weren't going to go ahead with the case against Joe Biden because he would come across as a sympathetic, forgetful old man to the jury. He was done at that stage. There was no coming back from that. polling show people had worries about his age. He should have at that stage read the political tea leaves and said, OK, we're going to need another candidate if we really care about beating Donald Trump. Because Donald Trump is a phenomenally effective
candidate. The misstep then by the Democratic Party, did they take into account whether it was misogyny or whether just kind of societally America's not ready for a female chief executive in Kamala Harris? I mean, should they have gone to the convention and had an open battle for the nomination?
Ultimately, when it came down to it, they just didn't have the time, the infrastructure, the ideas to make that happen. It wasn't politically realistic at that stage to move past your vice president to go for a convention. And also, no other Democrat wanted it. No other Democrat forced it. So there are times when we look at the decision that was made and say, how could you make that decision without looking at the wider context that the decision existed in? If they'd had more time and opened it up, well, then they would have been able to have those discussions. But look, going into the campaign itself, you can analyse the campaign itself as well. The Harris campaign made the decision to focus on increasing the vote with women, to get it higher than Hillary Clinton got, to get it higher than the 54%, to get it to the 55%, to the 56%. All of their messaging around abortion, all of their messaging around Trump being dangerous was aimed at that. It ultimately failed. There was a logic to it, but it failed ultimately because the exit polls show she got about the same amount of the female vote as Hillary Clinton.
There's one kind of theory knocking around that young men in this part of the world, as well as in the United States, but feel a bit disenfranchised that the world is moving in women's direction and they wanted to kind of put a stop to it.
Yeah, and look, the gender divide in the polling, the gender divide in America is a real thing. And because we take our cultural touch points from the US, that is something that could possibly seep in here as well. But the changes there weren't just in young men. You know, that's not why the Trump won this election. That there's lots of other different reasons for it. And I think when you look at the issues, when it comes down to the economic message that Trump had, I don't believe there was a counter that Harris could have had to that. Economic issues for them are inflation. There was no credible, emotionally compelling argument within 90 days that she could bring forward, because once inflation goes up, it doesn't come down. And talking about price gouging didn't work. While Trump had a very simple, emotionally resonant message, it was grand when I was there, I'm a businessman, I'll fix it. There's an emotional impact to that. So they had to try something else. They tried abortion and fear around Trump. It didn't work.
Now, I want you to have a listen to this. This is Scott Jennings, CNN political analyst, talking about what ended up being the fundamental issues.
Well, look, he has an opportunity here to try to unite the country after a huge victory. And this is a mandate. He's won the national popular vote for a Republican for the first time since 2004. This is a big deal. This isn't backing into the office. This is a mandate to do what you said you were going to do. Get the economy working again for regular working class Americans. Fix immigration. Try to get crime under control. Try to reduce the chaos in the world. This is a mandate from the American people to do that. I think I'm interpreting the results tonight as the revenge of just the regular old working class American, the anonymous American who has been crushed, insulted, condescended to. They're not garbage. They're not Nazis. They're just regular people who get up and go to work every day and are trying to make a better life for their kids. And they feel like they have been told to just shut up when they have complained about the things that are hurting them in their own lives. I also feel like this election, as we sit here and pore over this tonight, is something of an indictment of the political information complex. I mean, we've been sitting around here for the last couple of weeks, and the story that was portrayed was not true. I mean, we were told Puerto Rico was going to change the election. Liz Cheney, Nikki Haley voters, women lying to their husbands. Before that, it was Tim Walz in the camo hats. Night after night after night, we were told all these things and gimmicks were going to somehow push Harris over the line. And we were just ignoring the fundamentals. Inflation, people feeling like that they were barely able to tread water at best. That was the fundamentals of the election.
Scott Jennings, CNN political analyst. Some of the text coming in. You can talk about the mistakes the Democrats made, but not how well Trump has done. There's a reason he won. I think you got a sense of it there. It just goes to show the value of polls. 3 months of too close to call and on a knife edge, turns out not even close. Another one says, last night I was set to sit down and watch this election for hours. All of that changed when CNN did an exit poll. And one of the questions was, are you happy with America under the current presidency? Roughly mid-70% said they were not happy. I turned off the telly because that to me was the end. Harris was never going to win when that statistic popped up. Madness to have run her. That's from Keith. Anyway, what do you make of Scott's analysis there?
I think he's right that those were the fundamentals that decided the election. There's only so many times, I suppose, as political analysts on CNN, that they can say America are very unhappy with the economy. They're very unhappy with the level of inflation, and they're very unhappy with the level of immigration. So, I mean, it was always a strong hand for the Republican candidate. The only thing that was making it close was the idea that people had issues with Trump's character and then the abortion issue. But when it came down to it, the fears around those just didn't ultimately resonate. And something really interesting happened in American politics over the last 18 months, Pat, where if you ask people to define what makes a good economy, up until about 18 months ago, 70-ish% of people said jobs. It's the amount of jobs, it's the unemployment rate. Unemployment rate got fixed, and that switched to 70% said it's the price of groceries. So they changed how they defined what a good economy was. And I think the Democrats were probably a little slow initially in reacting to that change. And then when they did react to it, it felt too little, it felt too late, and you weren't going to bridge that gap. Because people, I say that Harris didn't focus on the economic issues or didn't have an economic message. She spent $300 million on television ads talking about inflation, talking about price gouging. She tried to change the conversation to housing and providing housing, but it wasn't going to cut through versus Trump's simpler message. So she had to switch the narrative and try to make the campaign about something else, because she wasn't going to win on those issues.
How do you feel then about the administration that he's going to put together? I mean, it is going to be a collection of pretty crazy people.
Yeah, and it's going to be an administration that has been very, very clear on what their priorities are.
I mean, tariffs, isolation.
RF Kennedy in charge of the health of the nation. Elon Musk is going to be in charge of cutting trillions from the federal budget. The only thing that you have to, I suppose, give credit to is in his speech tonight, Donald Trump said this is going to be a presidency of promises made, promises kept. He has been clear on what he's going to do. There is no idea here that anybody's been hoodwinked. There's no idea that people didn't show up and didn't know what they're going to get, or that, you know, they weren't taking Trump seriously. The American people looked at the agenda. They looked at the issues he was talking about, and they've decided, yes, this is the approach we want to take. So, I mean, when it comes down to it, there is an element of this is what democracy is. You can have major issues with what people are deciding. You can have major issues with what they've decided the solution is. But when it comes down to it, they did look at it. They've had 8 years to make up their mind, and they made up their mind in greater numbers. And the texter that said there, they are right. There's a tendency since the result to come in to say, oh, well, Harris was the wrong candidate. It was awful all the way along. That does discount the fact that Donald Trump is an incredibly effective political performer. No,
I mean, the concerns you have, though, is that the people who are anti-vax, for example, and the creation of vaccines was the single biggest health benefit ever invented by science, and second to that would be antibiotics. But I mean, the lives that have been saved by vaccination, and now you're going to have someone perhaps like RF Kennedy around the cabinet, if not in fact the health secretary, coming out with this stuff which is going to ultimately kill people
and ultimately impact us here and across the world. Again, I suppose on that, a couple of points worth making on that. Number one, the Democratic morale is now on the floor. Their energy level is on the floor. You wonder how much resistance they have left in them, you know, for a period of time. And I suppose the second thing, and it's wider than this, is they do now need to go back and analyse and say, right, what is our coalition? The Obama coalition that worked has fallen apart. It doesn't work anymore. The Biden coalition was an anti-Trump coalition. The Democrats need to look at the demographics and say, hang on, who are our 51% of voters going to be? And until they work that out, they shouldn't be talking about who their next candidate's going to be, who the leaders are going to be, because they won't know who's right to speak to them. They need to know who their audience is. I don't think they know that anymore. They tried this time to have it as college-educated women and women in general. It didn't work.
Didn't work. Lorcan Nyhan, columnist with the Sunday Independent, head of training at the Communications Clinic. Thank you very much.
The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance
on News Talk.